Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, the CTO of Free Ireland tells us about their new 5G offering. Derek Riley talks through the different types of electric scooters that are out there, and we'll hear what's next from Virgin Media TV. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We're going to start this week with Paul Higgins, who's the Vice President of Commercial at Virgin Media Ireland, to talk through what's called Virgin TV 360. So, Paul, a lot has happened for Virgin Media over the last number of years. It seems like every other week there's a new announcement or a new add-on, whether that is the mobile services, the broadband services, the TV services. It must be an exciting time to work for a company like that, particularly its presence here in Ireland, because we know that the TV space is highly competitive. There's the traditional TV companies, but also the streaming giants. So tell us a little bit about Virgin Media's approach to TV, and how do you guys get that before the eyes of the consumer so that people are signing up to you rather than some of those newer media offerings?
Well, look, you've hit it on the head. We've come an awful long way since, you know, the inception of cable TV. You know, we've committed all along to being aggregating great content for customers, you know, in one simple experience. And I guess it's just good, really fantastic to be in a position to bring our latest and greatest TV service to the market with TV 360. We've done an awful lot of listening. You know, we've done an awful lot of talking to customers and hearing, you know, why things should be better, what they want to see different, how they want to kind of see the service improved. And we think we've really kind of hit something for them, really, to give them what they want in the best possible way they want it. And why do we think that? You know, we've been talking to customers for the last kind of couple of months now about the new service, and it's got fantastic kind of ratings. You know, we're getting rave reviews about the service because of what we've listened to and because of what we've done to make the service better.
Let's talk through some of the features of the Virgin Media TV offering, because again, it's not the most exciting thing to research if you're a consumer. You just want to be able to get to the content. You don't really want to, you know, sit down with spreadsheets and do a comparison. So just give us a bit of an overview of what makes your offering a bit different.
Sure. And you're right. You know, when we've asked customers to tell us, you know, what do you want different? How do you want it to work? You know, we need to relate it to something. And I think that's what we've done. So, for example, we've now got, you know, a super fast and friendly user interface. You know, it's quicker and more intuitive. And what does that mean for customers? It just means they can find the content they love much easier. You know, we've taken out layers, you know, we've brought functionality closer to the customer. And that just means they can discover, consume, and control their own viewing experience. So, you know, they don't have to go looking for anything. You know, it sounds like it's not a big deal, but, you know, customers now just want to get things right at the fingertips, and TV content's no different at all. So we think that's probably one of the big changes that consumers will see. There's also now a seamless multi-room viewing experience. So, you know, we've got our kind of TV 360 mini boxes that you know, customers can put in any room in the house, and they stream recordings from the main box through to the mini boxes. So, you know, you can, you know, pause the show downstairs and finish it off upstairs. And these are all little things that consumers said, you know what, we just would love to be able to kind of move around, not be kind of locked into one device. And that seamless experience extends to the app. So it's not just kind of confined to a box in a room, you know, on phones, on iPads, on any kind of tablet device. You know, customers can now take that kind of content viewing wherever they want in the home. You know, those things kind of wrap together. It really is kind of bringing kind of the latest technology advancements with the content discovery and just making things a hell of a lot easier for customers. Because ultimately, we all now are used to seeing and experiencing content like a Netflix or an Amazon Prime, you know, that whole binge watching feature and functionality. And what we've done, we've taken the best way of watching content and we've put it on our new box and let customers watch any content now like that, whether that's series recordings, whether that's box sets, whether that's kind of personalizing their own EPG slot. So you know, I get one and the other people in my house get something different. So we've done, as I said, we've done a lot of listening. You know, we've teased out a lot of what customers really want, and we think we've landed on something that gives them that absolute control that they've been asking for.
Let's talk through some of the features of the Virgin Media TV offering, because again, it's not the most exciting thing to research if you're a consumer. You just want to be able to get to the content. You don't really want to, you know, sit down with spreadsheets and do a comparison. So just give us a bit of an overview of what makes your offering a bit different.
Look, I think in a very, you know, very simple way to answer that is, you know, we've let customers, you know, be very central to how we've designed the experience. And we've let engineers deliver it. And I think that's got to be the kind of the way forward. You know, too often, you know, we have, you know, engineering led, you know, fantastic engineering solutions, you know, brilliant kind of engineering platforms. But until the customer can kind of, you know, navigate, control, you know, discover the way they want, it just is too much technology nearly. And that, I think, has been the central part of why we've got to where we've got to in such a way. You know, customers now don't need to, you've hit the nail on the head, you don't need to think about it. You don't need to think about going looking for something. In fact, you don't even have to go looking for it. You know, if you want to find it, you find it. You know, whether that's the remote control being easier, as I said before, taking layers out of that whole discovery experience, or even the voice control. You know, the voice control has probably been a revelation to a number of different customer types. Of all ages, you know, young and old. And the people that use the voice control, we see them using it an awful lot. You know, it's probably their primary access to discovering content. So I think, you know, if you have to think about it and we have to explain it, we've lost. You know, I think when customers get this new service in the living rooms and the remote control in the hands, we won't really be explaining the features and functionality. It'll just become very, you know, it'll become very experiential.
Yeah, it's funny because I think for some time, technology companies got very excited about what they could do and they could cram loads and loads of features and content in before the eyes of consumer. But that then meant that me and people like us spend so much time fishing through what was out there that we then didn't have, I suppose, the energy to watch something or to enjoy it as much as would have been possible, I suppose, if it had just appeared before our eyes. So I do think that streamlined approach is quite nice. And what I've seen of the new offering, it does feel a good bit cleaner and it's more intuitive as well in terms of where my brain wants it or how my brain wants it to look and appear and that sort of thing. I want to talk briefly about how the content is displayed, because I know on Virgin Media, and it's the same with other providers as well, you have a lot of partners in terms of content. There are a lot of different channels hosted on your platform. There are not a lot of other streaming services hosted on your platform. Is there much thought and conversation and planning around what gets displayed where? Like, do Virgin Media TV channels, for example, get higher precedence on the platform versus something that you guys don't own?
The way we've designed the new interface, Jess, is that we're just giving consumers, you know, we're letting them control where they want to go. And really, we're letting the content, you know, decide how the customer wants to kind of use the service. So apps like Netflix and Amazon Prime are in the app section, you know, easy to find, recently used. You click on, you click in and you go for it. Box sets are easy kind of to find. As I said, the voice kind of control allows you to find films, you know, box sets, programs, you know, actors, actresses, characters, whatever it might be. So we think, you know, not having a traditional home page, as it were, you know, it's now just, do you want to find on demand content? Do you want to go back 7 days? Do you want to, you know, do you want to watch a movie? Do you want to rent a movie? Do you want to go into one of the players? Do you want to go into kind of one of the app kind of you know, features like Amazon or Netflix? Just giving customers that control to find the actual content they want so much quicker has been the biggest kind of revelation for us, I think. And it's something our customers are giving us fantastic feedback on already.
The thing I noticed as well is that the box itself is smaller. It's neater. There's less fuss, which I have a bit of a cable phobia and I hate seeing cables floating out of everywhere. But I really appreciate the design of it because it tends to be quite visible in the living room, depending on where your TV is. So small tweaks like that must be appreciated by the consumer as well, even though it's probably more of an engineering function rather than aesthetic.
Well, you know, it's fair to say that there's an awful lot packed into, you know, that little box. And that's testament to the engineers and testament to the huge R&D work that goes into kind of delivering this. But the form factor of the box we see is really important because you're right. You know, you walk into your living room, you see your telly, you know, you see the box underneath it. So, you know, we did give an awful lot of thought to making sure that it was, you know, the right size. It wasn't too bulky. You know, it was able to kind of, you know, have a sleek design that didn't look out of place with you know, modern TVs and modern kind of living rooms. You know, one of the big things we're probably really proud of within that form factor is, you know, the environmental friendliness of the box. You know, it's a 64% reduction in energy consumption versus the old box, and really does underline our commitment to kind of ongoing kind of sustainability in every kind of piece of kit that we now manufacture.
You mentioned there about the voice control tech and the remote control. You know, a lot of us are bringing different parts of technology into our homes, whether that is a Google Home or an Amazon Echo. Do you think we're going to see continue to see this type of integration of smart tech into our entertainment consumption as time goes by?
I think so, because I think kind of, you know, voice means that, you know, you're not going looking for anything. And interestingly, some of the feedback we've had around kind of the voice control versus like a home assistant is, you know, with the TV service, there's something there, you know, it's readily, you know, you ask the voice control something, it comes up straight away. You know, it's more of an immersive experience perhaps than some of the voice control, you know, home assistants that we have. But there's definitely a move to kind of integrate those things. You know, there's a lot of work we're doing to kind of work out how we, you know, integrate our smart home proposition that we have in the market into the TV service. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of great ways to use technology to make customers' lives simpler again.
Anytime the issue of voice control comes up on the Pat Kenny Show here on News Talk or even here on Tech Talk, a lot of people will think security concerns and they will be a little bit conscious of that, because if you have a toddler, for example, who's learning to talk and they're pressing the button, if you have an elderly relative who doesn't know how to use it, if you yourself aren't overly familiar with how it works, security is sort of at the forefront of your brain. You don't want the remote control listening into different conversations.
They're valid concerns, and I think that's why, you know, we were very keen to make sure that when we launched, it was all within its own kind of ecosystem. You know, it's a remote control that is in effect like a microphone. You know, you have to pick it up, you have to press the microphone button, you have to talk into it, and that kind of, you know, just talks to the TV box. You know, it's a self-contained ecosystem that's very user-friendly, very kind of intuitive, because we recognize that people had those kind of security concerns. So I think it's right that we've kept it within that its own ecosystem at the moment.
What are the key factors that you've found from consumers when you're doing your research, you know, when it comes to what provider they're choosing? Is it that it's bundled in with TV and broadband? Is it value for money? Is it station offering? Is it the interface? Because as I mentioned at the top, you know, there's so much choice out there, and I'd be intrigued to know what people care about when it comes to choosing one provider over another, particularly because these things can be quite pricey every month.
Absolutely, you know, and it's something we're constantly looking for feedback on. And there's a few things we see. One is, you know, that it's the, you know, the culmination, the combination of a number of products. So, you know, great broadband, you know, and a great TV service is really the kind of the, you know, the duo that people are looking for. You know, not really kind of worthwhile having a fantastic TV service if you're, you know, if you're buffering in the bedroom. Likewise, you know, no point having the best kind of broadband if, you know, you're disappointed in the content that's on your TV service. So finding the right balance between, you know, the best broadband, great speed, great reliability, and fantastic TV viewing is one thing that customers are looking for. The second is that they can just aggregate their own content without really, you know, being forced to buy additional things. So, We think it's really important that we've kept things like catch-ups, on-demand, box sets, all inclusive in the price. No additional price, no additional kind of charges for that type of content, and we think that's really important for customers. And the final thing is really what we've just been talking about. People want it to be easy. We don't want to be reading instructions, heaven forbid. We're conditioned now to not need to think about what we're looking for. We just want it to be very simple, very intuitive, and very fast. We want to get to the content we want to watch, and we want to get there very quickly. So I think those three things, a great broadband TV duo, nothing really hidden, no extras, to be charged for that content, and a very kind of seamless, speedy interface to get customers and let customers control that content in exactly the way they want to.
I've been doing tech stuff here on News Talk for many, many years now, and I think I've been involved in maybe 900 conversations about how traditional TV is dead and gone. It's a thing of the past. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Looking at what yourselves and some of your competitors are doing here in the market, it seems now that you and the consumer, we're all embracing technology in a new way, but there is still a place for traditional TV as we know and love it.
Look, it's that same thing, isn't it? It's TV's been dying for years and years, but yet people are still watching the same amount of content. They might be watching it in very different ways, Jess. But the content that used to be appointment to view is still great content. It just is that customers are watching it in different, as I said, in different ways, in different mediums, on different form factors. What we think is really important is giving customers that control. So whether it's getting halfway through the program and watching it from the start, whether that's having a great kind of replay back catalogue that you can just go to and catch up on what you missed over the last kind of week or so. Whether that's having a series link, recordings. You could have recorded six series of something and still use that binge watch kind of rollover feature that we know and love from the OTT kind of provider. So I think it's really trying to fuse, the viewing experiences that we love from, tech startups and new entrants into the market, like the OTT players, and fusing that experience and viewing opportunity with, what we know and love as, great content and great TV, like recordings, like box sets, like the channel lineup that we get from a linear viewing experience. So if we can get the best of both worlds, we think that's great for our customers.
Absolutely. Well, the new offering is called TV 360. Paul Higgins of Virgin Media Ireland, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next, we're talking electric scooters.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. And Derek, we're going to talk about something a little bit different today. The last few times we've been talking about electric vehicles. And today we're going to talk about electric scooters, which is something that we've had a few emails and texts and tweets about over the last little while. And I am intrigued by this subject, but I'm scared to use one because I don't know what the legality of them on the roads is at this moment in time. So can you just start by giving us a bit of an overview of what is the legal status of electric scooters at the moment?
Perfect. Yeah, electric scooters come underneath that whole umbrella of micro mobility or e-mobility or e-rides, lots of different terminologies. So at the moment, the legislation in Ireland is if it is powered by an electric motor, it is classified as an MPV, mechanically propelled vehicle. And so that is everything from electric unicycles, electric skateboards, one-wheel boards, and then electric scooters. There was a small bit of a gray area where they said, okay, if you have to kick off, as in use your feet to start it off, not just press a button, it was going to be okay. But then the Road Safety Authority said, you know what, if there's any motor in this at all, and you don't have to do anything to physically assist it, such as an electric bicycle, it's classified as an MPV. And in that sense, you need insurance and tax. But because you can't get insurance and tax on these vehicles or scooters, whatever it may be, technically they are illegal.
Okay. And it's kind of the technically that we need to be mindful of. And obviously, anything that we say in this segment of the show is not, endorsing rule breaking in any way, shape or form. There's a level of personal responsibility that comes with this. And we will obviously discuss about compliance within the guidelines and so on. Why or like when will this be looked at again? Because I know that Noel Rock, when he was a TD, was pushing very hard on this regard. I know that so many different interest groups pushing on this. I know myself, I've been bitching and moaning all week about public transport at the moment because it's absolutely rammed. And so this would be a good solution. So when can we expect an update?
The last minute for transport, Shane Ross put together a committee and got a report commissioned, all that kind of good stuff. And then there was an election. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what your political views are, he didn't keep a seat. And there's now a new minister for transport, which is Eamon Ryan from the Green Party. And so it's ready to rock, but like anything in legislation, it doesn't happen overnight. So New York rushed through some legislation because of the coronavirus and the pandemic. London are trialing something at the moment as well. So we're starting to be a lag behind on one side. And on the other side, then the government are saying Dublin's under level three. We recommend don't use public transport. And as I've seen from your social media, Jess, the Lewis is absolutely rammed. Mm-hmm. Buses are rammed. So if you this kind of micro mobility, e-mobility, e-rides, whatever you want to call them, are hugely popular because people say, do you know what, I'm going to do the commute myself. I'm not going to drive a car, a single occupancy car. I'm not going to contribute to pollution, noise level, all that kind of stuff. And then you don't want to go on public transport because people aren't adhering to the social distancing. So what are my options? I can buy a regular pedal bicycle, I can buy an electric bicycle, which is an assist, and then I can buy this array of electrically propelled vehicles, mechanically propelled vehicles, and everything from a unicycle all the way up. And I can talk you through each one of those as to what they look like. You might have seen them on the road, but as we said at the start of the piece, technically they are illegal on the roads at the moment. And we have had a case where somebody was brought to court, was fined, and they got points on their license because they weren't supposed to be on the road. And it's not the guard's fault, it's legislation. So we just have to be wary of that. But you'll see them everywhere. You'll see all of these types of micro-mobility solutions on the streets of towns and cities around Ireland.
Yeah, I've seen them. Even this morning when I was coming in, I saw someone on the Lewis with one. And again, I think they're a great idea. We just need the legislation to catch up because as I reviewed on the Pat Kenny show last year, I think it was, I went out and bought the Xiaomi M365 scooter, which is fantastic and I love it. But I don't use it anymore because I'm afraid I don't want to be the one that gets, well, firstly, that's doing something illegal that you're not meant to be doing. And also then that gets fined and pulled over. And it's that grey area because some people will say, oh, it's at the guard's discretion. Some people will say, oh, you're grand. And then other people are saying, no, black and white, when you put it down, it's actually you're not meant to do it. So just be mindful of that. So let's start with some of the unicycly looking ones. They are interesting.
Interesting, and you need to be, I'm not saying brave, but first of all, you need a good sense of balance. So on radio, obviously, it's difficult to describe what it's like. So if I was to describe what it was like, it's like a small car tire, small one, and there's two little footsteps on the center of that tire. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It's obviously covered over and all the rest of it. And it has lights and it has gyroscopic inside. And so sometimes they're called gyro wheels and other times they're called unicycles. And you literally hop up on it and you use your body weight to move forward or back and turn and all the rest of it. So it's the one that will take up the least space in your apartment or on public transport if you're using it as part of the leg of your journey. And it has a range of around about 100 kilometers, depending on the model, depending on the prices. And they start at about €400.
Okay, that's not too bad in terms of pricing. They kind of look like a one-wheeled Segway without the handlebar. Do you know what
Correct.
I mean? It's just the little, it's like a sideways skateboard with just one big tire underneath it.
Actually, Jess, that's an electric one wheel.
Okay.
So there's a slight difference. So yeah, so the unicycle gyro is literally like a wheel between your knees. Whereas what you're thinking of is what's called a one wheel, which is like a big massive rubber tire in the middle of a skateboard and you balance on the top of it. So just to clarify all that, and then we've got an electric skateboard, which is like a traditional skateboard, but there's motors in the wheels and you have a little controller in your hand and it'll help you zoom along.
I saw Casey Neistat flying through New York with those and he was testing different ones and different battery lives and all that kind of stuff. And I just feel with those three, so with the two types of one-wheeled thing and then with the electric skateboard, I feel that you're very, very, very exposed.
It is. And you know what? I was watching a documentary last night and I had a thing with somebody on social media about should you wear a helmet on a bicycle? And we're digressing a small bit, but it actually is to do with the infrastructure and how city planners plan their city. And in the Netherlands, if you've ever been, you'll see everybody around on their bicycles, very few of them wearing a helmet. And it's very similar to these kind of vehicles. But there's very few fatalities or injuries because they're kept away from cars and vans and trucks and buses. So their cycle paths and their laneways are separate. So your point of, I feel like I'm exposed. You're as exposed as a bicycle. If you're not inside in the shell, whether that be a car, whatever it may be, it's down to making sure that you're conscious of where you are, what you're doing, but also that the drivers around you are conscious of you and you're visible. You've got your high vis on. You've got the evenings are getting darker now. You've got your lights on. So make it as easy as possible for the drivers to see you, but also don't be the person that's shooting through red lights. Watch for pedestrians crossing. It's as responsible. You need to be as responsible as the car driver if you are going to be on any of these electric vehicles.
And 100% wear a helmet, regardless of what you're doing. Wear a helmet. Just do it.
Yes.
Okay, so that's that. Then let's move up to the scooters. Because as I mentioned, I bought the Xiaomi one. And I can't remember how much it was. I think it was less than €400, which I was pretty happy about. And It looks really, really nice. The battery life on it is okay. It takes an age to charge. I think it goes up to like 27 or 28 kilometers. Like it's nothing like a car in terms of its velocity in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and just to clarify, we call these in my realm, it's an electric kick scooter, because an electric scooter then is like a small motorcycle. Some people call those mopeds, but really there's no pedals on them. So what you have is an electric kick scooter because you need to kick it off. When you put your foot on it, you need to use your other foot and kick it off and then press the throttle and off you go. And the Xiaomi is great like that. You have the throttle on the handlebars. Yeah, roughly 25, 26 kilometers an hour, probably the same in range, 25, 26 kilometers, all dependent on the gradients that you're using, all dependent on your own personal weight because they'll have a weight capacity. So there's lots of factors that you need to take into account as to how much range or how much speed I'm going to get, what's the incline of the hills that I go up and down. But down of it all, you're not going to be traveling down to Galway on it. It is literally that last couple of kilometers, or if you're lucky enough to work close enough to where you live, it's the perfect mode of transport for it.
And this is the one that I have seen a lot of around town here in Dublin.
Yeah.
Because when I got my one, people were kind of giving us weird looks when we were going around them, which is fair enough. But now they've definitely become more common. They're still in and around the same sort of money, but that is, if someone is looking to break up their commute in terms of, you know, whether it is a bus and then the scooter or the Lewis and the scooter or just the scooter itself, it does pay for itself. But again, we need to clarify and emphasize that they're not meant to be on the roads at the moment.
Technically, they're not legal. So if you're happy enough spinning around your housing estate and not on public roads, absolutely. But yeah, there are so many of them on the roads, and I'm sure the guards are scratching their heads going, what do we do here? And if you are a rider and you have one and you are commuting at the moment, we don't condone it, but just be careful, be visible, wear your helmet, be safe on the road, number one. I have a review coming out in a couple of weeks for the, it's interesting, Seat, the car manufacturer, are after branding some Segway scooters as Seats, because they understand that somebody may buy a car, park up in a car park, and then use this little Seat scooter, which is the EXS, to get to work then that last final leg. So it's interesting when you see a car manufacturer as big as Seat going, do you know what, we need to be the transportation provider from start to finish, from everything from a big SUV all the way down to a scooter, a kick scooter. And it's great to see that they're thinking along those lines, that people, you can't do it really anymore, that you leave your house in a car and you get to where you're going in a car. There is going to be, have to be that leg of a journey that car park may not be right inside in your office. Your office may not have a car park.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Tech Talk here on News Talk. I'm chatting with Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. So Derek, what else is on the list of other options should the legislation come into place and we can all get one of these types of devices?
So yeah, they're the main ones. You've got the one wheel board, you've got the electric skateboards, so very similar one wheel or four wheels. You've got the electric unicycles and then the electric kick scooters. So that's all covered underneath legislation. But if you're worried and saying, you know what, I really don't want to think about this whole legislation thing and whether I am legal or not legal, there are a couple of other options as well. So you've got your electric bicycle. So what that is like a regular bicycle, and you can buy kits that'll retrofit your bicycle that you have already. So it'll actually put a little motor on the front wheel. And as you're pedaling, you can press a little button and it will assist you along, making those hills a bit easier, making the journey a bit easier. You're ending up at work and you're not having to have a shower or change your clothes or any of that kind of stuff. And so they range from everything from a retrofitted system all the way up to the brand new pop-up store in Wicklow Street there in Dublin for Van Moof, a Dutch bicycle, electric bicycle, and that's €2,000.
How much is the retrofit starter?
The packs, yeah, start around €500 up to €1,000. So depending on the ones that you go for. So if you've got a really nice bicycle already and you go, you know what, I wouldn't mind giving myself a little bit of a help as I'm getting in and out to work, you can retrofit it. So you need to let them know what type of bike it is, the size of the wheels, and they'll send you the pack then that'll put it over.
That's very cool. And that's not covered because you have to physically still pedal. That's not covered under the grey area.
Under legislation, exactly. So you just press a button. It's either called a boost button or a throttle button or whatever it may be. I reviewed the Van Moof. It was interesting. They put an ad out in France talking about how the car was not the mode of transport anymore. And it depicted the car shape kind of melting into a big puddle of oil, because obviously cars are powered by fossil fuels. And the lobbying interest in France got so up in arms about it, they banned the ad in France for being too controversial, because obviously there's huge car manufacturing companies in France. But it was the best thing ever for Van Moof, because everybody was talking about the ad that got banned on the back of this electric bicycle. And the Van Moof is like the Tesla of electric bicycles. It's got the app and everything is included inside the frame. You can go for a test drive in it if you're interested. It's there for the next month. But there's lots of electrically assisted bicycles out there. And there, as I said, they're not covered underneath the legislation. So no gray areas there. And then the top end of the spectrum, if you didn't want to go to an electric motorcycle, is the electric scooter. So that would be something you'd sit on, have your helmet on it, and you, depending on what age you are, you would have either had it included on your license for an AM license, so up to a 50cc equivalent, or you need to go and do some lessons and a test to be on an electric scooter.
And what kind of money are they?
Starting off at, I'm reviewing one at the moment, a new NIU, a Chinese brand, and NIU stands for, it's Mandarin for bull, and they have a U series starting at 2,200. And that is a range of about 80 kilometers, and you get up to about 30 kilometers an hour, but you're not doing anything. You're sitting down and you're literally just pulling the throttle. It's got all the lights and the indicators and all the rest of it. Great for shooting around town. So yeah, a really good option if you wanted to not be having to pedal, but you need to have the license and you need to make sure that you've got the tax and insurance. So it is, you've got the full range of electric mobility there if you want to get in and out of cities or you're commuting to work.
So you mentioned there about license and needing to do lessons and all the rest. I wonder will we get to a stage where that's the case for the electric kick scooter, if that's the correct term?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think so, because they are usually in cycle lanes and because in Ireland that you don't need a license to go on a bicycle. It's funny, my girlfriend is Polish and she's turned around to me and she says, when did you get your bicycle license? And I was like, what are you talking about? And she goes, oh, in Poland, you have to actually sit a test to be on a bicycle on roads. And when you think about it, it's probably not a bad idea, because if you're on the road, you really should know what the rules of the road are, when you're supposed to stop, start, all the rest of it. So we don't do that here. We're happy for people to take a bicycle and head out on the road, and they may not know what they're doing, or they do know what they're doing. Now, this isn't going to turn into an anti-cyclist, anti-motorist campaign talk, but you just need to be a bit smarter about the whole thing. And having the license, I'm not sure whether the government will bring in maybe a one-day test to show that you're road competent, probably not a bad thing. But yeah, it's part of a wider discussion. If you are on the road and you are mixing with massive lorries and buses and trucks and all the rest of it, you really need to have your wits about you.
I would love to hear what you think. Email techtalk@newstalk.com. If you're a motorist, if you're a cyclist, if you are someone who has one of those electric kick scooters, What do you want to happen? What should happen? What's your view? The email address, techtalk@newstalk.com. You can see all of Derek's reviews up on EV Review Ireland, the YouTube channel, if you just search for that. As always, Derek, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, we'll hear from the CTO of 3 Ireland about their new 5G offering.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly here on News Talk. On Monday morning, 3 Ireland, the mobile network, announced the arrival of its 5G network. So as of Monday morning, you were able to get a 5G plan, you were able to get a 5G phone and access the 5G network if you are a 3 Ireland customer. And on Monday morning, I sat down with David Hennessy, who's the CTO of 3 Ireland, to talk through what was being announced, how you would access it, and the benefits to the consumer. And I started by asking him to give me a bit of an overview of what was being announced.
So today we're announcing the launch of our 5G network. We're already the largest mobile data network in Ireland, taking over 65% of all the traffic. And now we're launching Ireland's largest 5G network. So we're launching with 35% population coverage. It's spread around the country, and we're launching with services in every county in the country as well.
And so where are the initial launch points, as of this morning, where could people get it?
So, of course, the larger cities were the principal areas, so Cork and Dublin, etc. But we're also launching services in all the larger towns around the country and some of the smaller towns as well. So we have 5G coverage in each and every county in the country. And the coverage map is available for people to check out on the website.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, so you can go up and have a look and see if your town is there. Talk to me a little bit about the requirements from the user. So I'm a 3 customer. I'm waking up this morning. I want to get 5G. What do I need? Do I need to move plan? Do I need a new SIM? Do I need a new phone?
So in terms of plans, we're including 5G in our top-end plans. So people on the 80 or 60-euro tariff will automatically have 5G as long as they've got a 5G-capable device. And then for lower postpaid plans and then on the prepaid plans, 5G is available for everybody with a 5-euro add-on. And we're launching with a number of different handsets. So we're launching 3 Samsung S20 variants, and we've got 2 Huawei variants as well that we're launching. And then between now and Christmas, we'll be extending our 5G portfolio up to 15 handsets.
Brilliant. So we have in the tech sector, we've been talking about 5G for quite some time. It's been a long road to get here. As CTO, you might just give us a bit of an overview in terms of the work that has gone in and why it's not as simple as just, sticking an extra layer on top of the mast that were already in existence.
Yeah, so it's been very interesting building the 5G network, and particularly with all the restrictions that have been in place for the last period of time. So 5G, it's brand new spectrum. So that means we need brand new equipment on all the towers. But also we required a brand new core network to support the advanced 5G services. So over the last year or so, we've been rolling out the radio network around the country, but also we've put in a lot of the new core services as well. It's gone very well in terms of deployment. We've achieved all the targets we wanted. It was never really our intention to do just a small launch. We wanted to launch something that was big, and when there was a sufficient number of 5G handsets available in the market, and we think we've got it right now.
Yeah, because sometimes, and it's the same with every sector, that there's often a rush to be the first one out of the traps. And we know that that's not the case in this instance, but you will have significant coverage. From a build and a cost point of view and an investment from 3 side, is it significant, because obviously I know nothing about this side of things. Is it a significant investment, and is it future-proofed to make it easier then to go to the next generations of data and whatever it is?
Yeah, so about every 10 years, we see a new technology between 2G, 3G, 4G, and now it's 5G. So it's kind of the technology of the future, or for the immediate future. It's part of an annual investment of about 100 million that we make into the network, and we'll be continuing this rollout of 5G for the next number of years, 3-4 years, etc. So we'll be continuously investing an awful lot. And what it does, it gives a whole, in this time when people are so reliant on connectivity, it gives a huge amount of additional capacity into the network, but also major performance boosts for our customers. So people will see some really, really fantastic performance out of the network now.
Some of the controversy around 5G, and this has been knocking around for quite some time, and we've kind of dismissed it in many, many different interviews and pieces along the way. But let's just talk about it. The safety concerns and some of the more conspiracy theory type pieces about 5G. What would you say as CTO and as someone who knows what they're talking about? Would you like to address that in any way, shape or form?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, it's kind of like climate change or anything else. You've got to trust the science, and we're trusting the science on this. So we comply with the ICNIRP guidelines. That's the International Commission for Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection. And those guidelines are endorsed by the WHO, they're endorsed by the EU, by the Irish government. So everything we're doing is correct and consistent with science and safe. With regard to the conspiracy theories, I think if we went back to kind of April, May timeframe, there's quite a lot of noise. But in actual fact, what we've seen is an awful lot of public support and pushback against the people who are portraying these conspiracy theories. And the rollout has actually progressed very, very well. So, you know, long may it last.
Absolutely. What is the level, and this could be a stupid question, but is the level of upkeep of the 5G network, is the ongoing maintenance of the different masts and towers that you have around the place, is that a cumbersome job? Is it any more cumbersome than when it was 3G, for example?
Not particularly, no. It's pretty much the same activities. But I think with 5G, we will see more and more kind of criticality coming into the network. So the importance of maintenance is you know, keeps rising and rising. And we'll probably see the networks densifying quite a lot as well. So more network to maintain. But in terms of the activities, it's no more complex than anything previous.
One, the 5G has been sort of heralded as it's the next generation. It's the thing that will enable us to do more, make our cities and indeed the entire country that bit smarter because of the consistency of the connection. But the consistency, I suppose, is only as good as, I suppose, the density of the coverage. Do you think that we will get to the stage where this could be powering, you know, autonomous vehicles to drive from Donegal down to Cork?
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. Now, that's not going to happen, you know, tomorrow or next year. But what we'll see is we're seeing kind of the first implementation of 5G, which is really about giving much, much better speeds when you're in coverage and better latency, higher connection densities supported. So within kind of a dense area of network, we can support an awful lot more connections, which is what enables things like smart cities.
Mm.
The other thing about 5G is 5G is kind of built as a service enablement layer. So it allows clever people and other companies to build services that sit on the 5G network. Previously, say with 4G, the services were generally built on the handset, so built on Android or built on iOS. Whereas with 5G, we have the opportunity to start building services at a network layer, which means that when you talk about things like driverless cars or, you know, drone control or these types of services, you can exploit the network fully and the attributes that are within the network fully to create these types of services into the future. So it will absolutely undoubtedly happen.
Who have been your partners, like in terms of the technology used and so on? Who have you worked with to build your 5G network?
So for the 5G network, it's exclusively Ericsson. So it's an Ericsson core network and Ericsson radio network as well. And our 4G network is also currently being upgraded to Ericsson as well from Samsung.
And will this be, and again, another stupid question, but will this impact the call quality that some people have around the country? Because there are certain pockets of the country and they have to, you know, I interviewed a woman in Galway, Mayo area, and she kind of has to go to her treehouse to make a decent phone call. Will this improve call quality in any way, shape or form?
Yeah, no, the technology is certainly better. So you've kind of got the coverage stuff and the services you put on top of the service or on top of the coverage, like voice. What 5G does is it enables better services to sit on top of the network. So in time, voice will move onto 5G, and that should certainly improve kind of voice resolution and voice quality in the network.
Looking sort of ahead, or right now, so there's a lot of talk about 5G devices. Consumers, you know, listeners to this show and to the Pat Kenny show text in all the time saying, you know, is now the time for me to buy a 5G device? And this has been happening since the first 5G network went live in Ireland. Do you think now is the time, or is it a case of hold off until next year's phones come out and we'll have greater population coverage and then it'll be really worth it? So you're future-proofing yourself.
So I think now is the time, definitely from today, because we finally have a network with a very, very substantive footprint. We're being very transparent about where we do and don't have coverage, and we would encourage customers to check the coverage availability in their area. But if you've got coverage, you should definitely go for it right now. I do think into the future, we will see kind of 5G just becoming more and more mainstream within handsets, and eventually everybody will be using 5G. But for people in coverage now, there's absolutely no reason not to move to it.
The website, I'm just on it here now, so you can go to 3.ie/coverage checker, and that'll give you a breakdown on everything. So voice and text, 3G, 4G, 5G, you can search. There's an interactive map there that you can go and see. How important is it that the consumers come along with the network as they invest so heavily in things like 5G? Because you may get customers, and I get it all the time when I'm talking about high-speed broadband, for example, people might say, oh, sure, I've no interest in watching 4K Netflix. Why would I bother paying the extra money for, you know, 5G capability on my phone?
Yeah, look, I've been using 5G for the last month. And it is discernibly better than previous technologies. Even for basic things like browsing, the latency improvements make a huge difference. And the immediacy when you click something on your device, the immediacy of the reaction you get is very, very plain to see. It's kind of like driving a very good car. Mm. You can really, you know, you can really feel it when you're using it.
From a business point of view, will the business consumers or customers get more from the network than the average Joe Soap who just wants to download a Netflix file in a matter of seconds? You know, is that where we're going to see the real difference?
I think certainly there will be opportunities into the future to build business specific applications to sit on the network. So if you talk about, I don't know, smart factories or other kind of industrial type applications, those things will certainly open up new business opportunities. But it's very much aimed at consumer as well. And what I would expect is initially it would be consumer uptake that drives the adoption of 5G.
So it is out there for consumers to get from today. Do you have expectations in terms of the number of people who come knocking on your door looking to sign up from today?
Well, without giving any numbers, we of course have our business plans, and our hope and expectation is that, you know, 5G adoption will start from today and we start seeing significant numbers coming onto the network.
David Hennessy, CTO of 3 Ireland, thank you so much for your time. And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app, on iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.